Welcome to our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, November 9th. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is here. We'll discuss the latest in Wisconsin politics, including the Senate votes on the Government Accountability Board and campaign finance law. We'll also take a look at the state's role with regard to the closing of Madison's Oscar Mayer plant, food share restrictions passed by the Assembly, and other news from beneath the state Capitol dome. What questions do you have about what's going on in state government and state politics? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's new Capitol Bureau Chief, and he joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so you were up very late on Friday night into early Saturday morning along with the state Senate. What were they doing in the wee hours of the morning?
They were passing a rewrite of Wisconsin's campaign finance laws, and they were dismantling the Government Accountability Board and replacing it with an Ethics and Elections Commission, kind of similar to the boards that the GAB replaced when it was created 8 years ago.
So let's start with campaign finance. So what did the Senate pass when it came to campaign finance?
Well, I think a lot of the big stuff that we talked about in advance of this is still in the bill that they passed. So they would double what you can give to political candidates. So, you know, instead of giving the governor a maximum of $10,000, you could give him $20,000. Now, they did change that so it won't be indexed going forward, but they did stick with that. There is still pretty much, you know, unfettered coordination allowed between interest groups and candidates, as long as interest groups, you know, don't mention words like vote for or vote against. But they also, I guess they changed some of the wording on when you can coordinate with groups that run actual campaign ads, express advocacy. And the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign said that their reading of it, and I mean, they pointed out because it uses words like specifically, and that it creates sort of a loophole where with a wink and a nod, you could basically coordinate under state law and there'd be nothing that regulators could do about it. So there was one provision that we were talking about that we thought they might change, and that is right now under campaign finance law in Wisconsin, as it stands today, when you give to a candidate, you have to list your employer. Assembly Republicans took that out. It sounded like the Senate Republicans might put it back in. That is, keep the requirement, at least for higher dollar contributions. But they did not. So that is gone. And, you know, this is...
So essentially, did the Senate pass the same version of campaign finance law changes that the Assembly passed?
Yeah, aside from, you know, some of the changes that I talked about there with express advocacy, and they did put some limitations on corporate contributions to political parties. So it would be a little harder for that corporate money to flow in unlimited amounts directly to candidates. You know, there would be a limit on it, and parties that get unlimited donations would have be limited in what they can do with it. They can't necessarily go out and spend it right on a candidate, but there would still be ample opportunities for unlimited donations to the political parties.
So remind us, Sean, why did Republicans think that this change to campaign finance law was warranted or justified or needed?
This was something that was pushed both in the Assembly and in the Senate by the legislative leaders. In the Senate was Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, and he stood up and said, look, this is something that the courts essentially forced our hand with, that the current campaign finance law in Wisconsin is full of holes. It's illegal. And so what we're doing here is we're modernizing it to reflect the current state of affairs.
By updating our laws to meet current court decisions, we are creating a system where all money may be accounted for in a legal, regulated, and transparent manner that meets current judicial standards for campaign finance regulation. Now, I know there's other concepts and ideas out there, and some of those will probably be brought up this evening, either through amendments or possible past pieces of legislation. But what I would say is that it's a new game. It's a new day. And it's not something that this body necessarily controls. but it's something we have to adhere to. We have to change this set of statutes.
But the Democrats disagreed with that.
Yeah, and I mean, he mentions transparent there. This doesn't, I guess, make any effort to require interest groups that get involved in campaigns to disclose their donors, especially if they, you know, choose their words carefully. Depends how they organize under the tax code. There's no push to have disclosure, which is something that, you know, even as the United States Supreme Court has said, money is speech, it has also said disclosure is good. And so that's something the Democrats were arguing, but it didn't ultimately end up in this bill. Ashland Democrat Janet Bewley was one of those who spoke out. She sounded kind of incredulous as the Senate was about to pass this around midnight, said that essentially that this was done in the name of people campaigning and not in the name of people voting.
This is madness. This has nothing to do with the voter. Nothing to do with the voter. What it does have to do with is giving up the privilege that we have to communicate in a simple way with our voters, and instead devote all of our time to how do we maneuver the money? Where do we go? How do we do it? As if the object of the game is to drive a big bus full of money. And that is what's going to lead to a good democracy.
So do Democrats offer an alternative, or did they just say no to the change?
No, they had a bunch of amendments that they proposed on there. I think some of the ones that drew the most debate was the one that would require disclosure of donors. And that was, you know, where they were quoting from Justice Scalia, who's not exactly, you know, one of the court's liberals on the U.S. Supreme Court, where Scalia talks about the benefits of disclosure. But again, that one didn't go anywhere. Some of the most heated exchanges you heard, though, were on this provision that Senate Republicans ultimately went along with the Assembly on, and that is they would, going forward, you would no longer have to list your employer when you give directly to a state political candidate. And this was something that, you know, as late as Friday afternoon, Senate Republicans were saying, well, we're not sure on this. We got people on both sides of the issue. It sounded like they were going to put their employer requirement back in, but they didn't. So Van Wongard of Racine, a Republican, said that he was one of those who pushed forcefully to take that requirement out. And he said that the reason is when you put that when you have to list your employer on a donation, then people who don't like a candidate will end up going after that employer. Here's Van Wongard.
So what ends up happening here? We identify the employer, and now we put a target on the employer's back. And we put a target on the employee's back because they're working for that employer. I don't think that the employer should be listed, and that's why I spoke up in caucus about it. And I feel very strongly about that just because of the garbage that I went through with Act 10.
So why did Democrats think that the employer should be disclosed?
They're saying that, you know, there are some instances where it's the only way you're going to know if an employer, if a business is trying to get a piece of legislation passed in their name, you know, by checking who all is giving to a candidate, and you notice a pattern of, well, all these people work for this business, and this lawmaker pushed a piece of legislation that supported that business. They're saying that's one of the few ways you have right now to connect the dots, and you're taking that away. Here was Milwaukee Democrat Tim Carpenter.
If you're going to be prostituted, we want to know where the money's coming from. So if you're going to be prostituted in this body, I want to know where the money's coming from.
This is one of the few points in the night where, I mean, it got pretty heated there in the Senate, and they had to take a little breather as this came up. But ultimately, you know, that was included in the bill. I would say that Senate Republican Robert Coles of Green Bay did vote against the campaign finance bill.
Interesting. All right. So around midnight or so, this campaign finance law was passed, and then it was a little bit later, like 2:30 in the morning.
2:30 when they passed the Government Accountability Board rewrite.
And we will get to the Government Accountability rewrite after we check news. We'll also talk about some changes to food share that were passed by the State Assembly. And we'll talk about roads, the Joint Finance Committee approving $350 million in borrowing for roads, getting some Democrats to help with that. We will also welcome any questions you have about the issues being debated at the state capitol. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sean stays with us until about 7:40. Then at about 7:45, we will welcome in Democratic State Senator Jennifer Schilling to talk more about these issues. This is the State Capitol Report. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, along with our State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who is bringing us up to date on the issues making news at the State Capitol. Talking now about the State Senate's late night, early morning session on Friday going into Saturday, when senators passed changes to campaign finance law and the Government Accountability Board. We'll talk about the dismantling of the Government Accountability Board with this legislation now. And we do welcome any questions you have for Sean, or maybe you have some reactions to the bills that were passed, campaign finance or the overhaul of the GAB. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Sean, did the State Senate's version of the new State Elections Board, I guess, mirror what the Assembly did?
It did not. So this is one where they actually made a change to get some of the Senate moderates on board. What they did is, the Assembly version would blow up the Government Accountability Board. And so right now the GAB is run by 6 nonpartisan judges. What the Assembly wanted to do is create an Elections Commission and an Ethics Commission that was split evenly between Democratic and Republican appointees. That got over to the Senate, and one of the concerns with that idea is that it's very much like the Federal Elections Commission, where you have an equal number of partisan members and they just cancel each other out. Nothing gets done. They don't pursue any investigations, and the agency is essentially toothless. So what a handful of Senate Republicans approved, or I guess pushed, and got their colleagues to go along with, is that there would be 2 judges on the Ethics Commission. So in addition to these partisan appointees, there would also be 2 judges. Now, the judges would be chosen from a pool submitted by Democrats. One would be chosen from a pool submitted by Democrats. One would be chosen by a pool submitted by Republicans. So, they would maybe be under some pressure to represent their nominating party's interests there, but it is different than the Assembly version, and Senator Luther Olson said that he thought it was enough that you wouldn't have complete gridlock, that if you were able to convince a couple judges to go along with the investigation, as long as you got 2 of them, you would be able to pursue investigations.
Yeah. So did Democrats think that was a good compromise?
They said it was a step in the right direction. But if you look at the bill as a whole, they said, there's no reason that we need to go this route. I think, it was interesting to hear this debate was happening between about midnight and 2:30 a.m. on Saturday. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald really launched into why he sees the need for this changes. And he didn't kind of dance around like, well, the audit of the GAB showed they weren't promulgating administrative rules or things like that. He went right into this John Doe 2 investigation, which was an investigation where the GAB was heavily involved, and it was an investigation into whether conservative groups and Governor Walker's campaign illegally coordinated during the recall, or more specifically, whether these groups were you know, basically doing ads, taking contributions for the governor, and he wasn't reporting them. So Fitzgerald said, if you look at everything that's come out in these court documents, and including some documents lately in a lawsuit in Waukesha County, you can see that, in his words, the judges on the board didn't really know what was going on, and staff was running the show. And, you know, one staff member in particular, an attorney for the board, was really kind of driving that investigation. So he says, you know, these are unelected officials. They're trying to subvert the will of the legislature, in his words, and that shouldn't happen.
What happened over there, going back over the last 5 years, should never happen to anyone. It should never happen. We are the ones who set the course for the state. Whether you agree or disagree with the public policy that comes out of this house, that is our job. We should never, never, ever have a bureaucrat who thinks they are at the same level or above us making those decisions.
I guess Democrats said, come on, this is more of you're grinding a political axe here. And that if you talk to the judges who are on the Government Accountability Board, when they ordered this investigation on a unanimous vote, they'll say, yeah, we knew exactly what we were doing. We knew it was a big deal. We knew we were going after powerful people, and we did it anyway. So Senator Julie Lassa of Stevens Point said really what this was a move by Republicans to get after an agency that went after them.
You can't blame them. They were carrying out the law. And just because you don't like what they did, because they did catch people's hands in the cookie jar, is no reason to get rid of them. They should be celebrated for upholding our clean campaign finance laws in the state, not being dismantled.
So that both of these issues have to go back to the state assembly in order to finalize them.
Yeah, and I don't, especially with the Government Accountability Board, I don't think that's a large enough change that it would derail it, because, you know, the assembly was talking about keeping judges on the board initially anyway, and they didn't because other senators didn't want them there. So it's not, I mean, I think that thing is going to head to the governor's desk. You know, the campaign finance changes, sometimes something that looks like it's not a big deal on a, you know, Friday night around midnight could in fact be a pretty big deal once you start to read the statutes. So, but the assembly is the last stop for those.
And that will happen. The assembly session is next, a week from today.
Right.
November 16th. I'm Joy Cardine with Sean Johnson. If you have a question about the legislation before our state legislature, either campaign finance or Government Accountability Board or something else, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dave in Madison is with us. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. I think it's interesting that the Senate and Assembly give themselves and the governor a pass on John Doe. They fixed the Government Accountability Board so that they can't be investigated that way either. I was wondering if you could think of any legislation in the past 40 years that has been as self-serving as this.
Well, that's Sean, you haven't been there for 40 years.
I have not. But you do have this package of bills here that is very easily connected to this John Doe investigation. I mean, the campaign finance bill, it basically blesses the type of behavior that the Government Accountability Board and, you know, the special prosecutor were investigating. And it was first blessed by the state Supreme Court, but this is codifying that state Supreme Court decision that says, no, that's not wrong, that's okay. And then you've got the tool that was used to investigate that, the John Doe. John Doe's still exist in Wisconsin for many crimes, but you cannot use them to investigate political crimes or, I guess, to investigate potential political misconduct as they were doing here. And then you look at the agency that was the central figure in that investigation, and it's going to be gone. And also the central tenet of that investigative power, You know, the GAB has some sufficient funding, which means they have an independent funding stream to pursue these investigations. That's going to be gone, which means in the future, this ethics commission, even if they see something that they think, hey, we gotta pursue that, if it gets to be more than $25,000, they'll have to go before the legislature to ask for extra funding. So, you know, lawmakers have said that's a separation of powers issue, and that's the way that it should be. But it could be, as you can imagine, pretty awkward if they're investigating legislators to go before some of those very legislators and ask for more money.
Well, let's move on to some other issues that happened in the state legislature last week. The Assembly passed a number of bills that they say will reform food share, including one that would require food stamp or food share recipients to carry photo IDs in order to get their benefits?
Yeah, I think this is the most interesting of the food share bills that they passed because, first of all, that's something that people can connect to, right? Oh, yeah, if you're going to get these benefits, you should have this ID that says you are who you say you are. It's a similar argument that we've heard to, you know, voter ID. We're familiar with that argument. The thing is, with this photo ID on food share cards, it's going to cost state government $3.6 million to set up, another $1 million to run every year. If you look at all funds, that is, you lump in federal funds, you're north of $7 million to get this thing going in the first year, and people don't have to show the cards, and retailers don't have to ask for the cards.
Yeah, what's the deal? What? And in fact, they're not supposed to ask for
right,
the cards.
Right. So because that would be a violation of federal rules for this program, you know, that so the Assembly could have said, okay, we're going to ask for a federal waiver, which is basically we're going to ask for permission to do this. They dropped that. They dropped that part of the bill, and so they're just going to. They're going to set up these cards, and they're saying that if we get a Republican administration in Washington, these rules could change. But in the interim, we're looking at, you know, $4.6 million in state taxpayer money to set up this year and $1 million thereafter to keep it running for photos that you can't check.
So then those who have the concern, hey, I'll give my card to my mother and I'm disabled and I need help getting my groceries, they're not going to be stopping the mother from buying the groceries for her disabled son.
Right, right. But I think even in, you know, if you think there's something wrong going on there, say somebody sells a card, okay? Say a retailer looks at it and says, hey, that's not you. They can't use that picture as a reason to justify denying service.
Yeah.
They could report it, but they couldn't write on the spot say, no, that's not you, we're not going to do this.
So what else? Because we're a little short on time, maybe we can clip through the other changes.
Sure. So some of the other ones, they would freeze a food share recipient's benefits if they're not used for 6 months and send all the unused benefits back to the government if they're not used for a full year. And the idea there is that, you know, these benefits are for people who are hungry, who need help now, and that if you're accumulating the benefits over 6 months, that's not what the program was aimed for. And also, there was one that would limit the number of replacement cards for food share recipients in a one-year period. The sixth time someone asks for a replacement card, they'd be denied unless they give an appropriate explanation on what why they need it. That what constitutes an appropriate explanation would be up to, you know, people that work for these agencies.
We've been getting some questions on Facebook. Could these state-issued photo IDs on a food share card be used to vote?
Not right now. No, mm-hmm. That's something that was talked about, but they would not be among the IDs that would be usable for voting.
Yeah. And last week, Governor Walker said that the public benefits recipients, we would start testing them for drugs starting this week.
November 9th, yeah. So that's today, right?
Yeah,
so,
that's today.
And the way that works, it's not gonna be like when you go to the office to apply for unemployment. I mean, the line's not going to divert to the bathroom right there. You would have to fill out a questionnaire and say whether or not you've used drugs. They could use that questionnaire as a means to drug test you.
Let's take
a
some
reason to drug test you.
We have a caller who's been waiting. Dwayne in Hayward is with us. Hi, Dwayne.
Good morning. I was wondering if the Senate passed SB 102, which is the knife reform law that the House passed.
Very briefly, what is that reform bill?
Yeah, this is a bill that would essentially legalize all types of knives in Wisconsin to be carried, whether concealed or in the open. So it would let you carry a switchblade in your pocket, or it could let you carry a switchblade walking down the street in your hand. It would not only end the state's ban on switchblades, it would apply to all knives. And I'm pretty sure it was busy day Friday. I'm pretty sure that has not gone anywhere in the Senate yet.
Yeah. The Joint Finance Committee last week did approve $350 million in borrowing for roads in a rare vote, you say, Sean. Why was it so rare?
Yeah, very rare, because you had all Senate Republicans voting against the borrowing, all Assembly Republicans voting for the borrowing. And, I think making it more rare is that this is kind of a pickle that the governor's found himself in, right? You've got all these road projects that are going to be delayed. The blame's going to fall on him if these don't go forward. And so Democrats hold some power there politically, and they could have said, look, Republicans, you're in charge. It's your problem. You deal with it. But they all voted for the borrowing. That is, they voted with Assembly Republicans to support the $350 million in borrowing. So the arguments that you heard were Senate Republicans were saying, look, we can't kick the can down the road. We have to wait for this new audit to come out to say how the state's deciding to spend its money before we decide to give any more money. Assembly Republicans are saying, hey, we can't wait on this now. These have to go forward. This is about safety. This is about economic development. Democrats were essentially saying the same thing while at the same time saying, gosh, you guys have been in charge of state government for 5 years now, and the road fund is a mess, and you haven't done anything to fix it. But again, Democrats voted with Assembly Republicans there. $350 million in borrowing gets approved, and that's on top of the $500 million in borrowing that they approved in the budget that they passed in July.
All right, let's talk for the next couple of minutes before our newscast, and then after news we will be welcoming in a Democratic state senator, Jennifer Schilling, to talk about other issues going on. She'll also be talking some about WEDIC and the announced closure of the Oscar Mayer plant in Madison. WEDIC did not try to keep the 1,000 jobs in Madison, Sean?
Well, I think what happened is this announcement surprised everybody in Wisconsin. So WEDIC found out about it last Wednesday when everybody else did. The governor didn't find out about it till last Wednesday. I think Dane County and the city of Madison didn't find out about it till might have been Tuesday night that the mayor found out about it. But nobody found out about it until last week. And then suddenly this century-old employer in Wisconsin, one of our hallmark corporate brands, it's been here in, fixture of the East Side forever, is gone. Poof. 1,000 jobs are going to be cut. And this is part of a reorganization happening across the nation with Kraft Heinz companies. That's going to lead to, I think, 2,600 layoffs. Now, you look around in the states where these layoffs happened. And in some places, it was mitigated a bit. So New York came up with a package of $20 million to retrofit three plants to preserve some jobs there. Iowa saw significant jobs cut, but not all the jobs cut. They came up with $4.75 million in incentives for Kraft Heinz. In Wisconsin, WEDIC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, never reached out to Kraft Heinz after their historic merger in July of this year. So, it was too late by the time they found out, and maybe there was nothing they could do. But that call was never made from Wisconsin's Economic Development Agency to these giant companies that just merged.
All right, Sean, we have just almost completely out of time here, but it's going to be a somewhat quiet week at the state capitol this week?
It should be, yeah. I mean, you do have some presidential candidates coming to Wisconsin, though, for debate tomorrow, so
and
that should be interesting.
We'll
Governor Walker
appearing
with Bush.
Thanks very much, Sean.
You're welcome.
News is next.